Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizoan Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Well, again, welcome everyone to tonight's special tribute to our founder, Shuzaku Roshi. And next Friday will be 5 years since Roshi left us. As time passes, the number of people who knew Roshi steadily decreases. But his presence is still here with us and will always be with us. Last year, the Jizoan Zen community celebrated its 40-year anniversary. And as you've heard me say on numerous occasions, that makes us one of the oldest Zen communities east of the Mississippi River. And that's something for us to be proud of. There have been a number of changes since Roshi's passing, our move from Pinewind to Cherry Hill in an effort to make the Dharma more accessible to a number of people. I'd like to offer a koan that I think is appropriate when looking back at Roshi's life and his vision of what a Zen community should look like. And the koan is called Linji Plants Pines, and it's from the koan collection called Koans of the Way of Reality. And Kyose included this koan in her recent teaching on Master Linji. In a teaching shortly after Roshi's death, I discussed this koan because it kept coming back to me, the words pines, as in Pinewind Zen Center. Linji was the founder of the Linji School of Zen, or as we know it today, the Rinzai School of Zen, or Rinzai Tradition. And the Rinzai Tradition uses koans extensively, and we align ourselves more with the Soto Tradition, which focuses on seated meditation. When you look at the various collections of koans, you typically have the koan, some commentary, and then a capping verse. In this koan, Wang Bo is Linji's teacher. So here's a koan along with the commentary and capping verse. And again, the title of this koan is called Linji Plants Pines. Once, when Linji was planting pine trees, Wang Bo, his teacher, asked, "Why plant all these trees deep in the mountains?" Linji answered, "First, I want to create good surroundings for the temple. Second, I want to create a landmark for future generations." So saying, he took up his mattock and hacked the ground 3 times. Wang Bo said, "That may be so, but I give you 30 blows of my stick." Linji again hacked the ground 3 times with his mattock and then let out a long exhalation. Wang Bo said, "Under you, our school will flourish greatly throughout the world." And the commentary. Creating good surroundings for a temple involves more than meets the eye. Creating a landmark for future generations has profound implications that resound in the 10 directions. If you think Linji's hacking the ground and planting pine trees are about agriculture, landscaping, or landmarks, you're bogged down in the mundane. If you want to understand the compassionate teachings of the masters, you must first realize that in the mundane, nothing is sacred. Then you must go beyond even this and realize that in sacredness, nothing is mundane. And then the capping verse. The buildings and grounds protect the Dharma and bring peace to all. The Sangha and the 10 directions will increase in wisdom and compassion. How this all comes to us is a gift we should not miss. So why is it important to create a landmark for future generations? As the commentary says, we are not talking about a geographic landmark only, but rather a spiritual one. And what would that be? It would have to be something significant, something established by one generation and recognized by the next, and the one after that, and the one after that. One day, Wang Bo found Lin Ji planting trees in the mountains, which seemed kind of odd. "Why plant trees deep in the mountain?" Wang Bo said. "Lin Ji, first, I want to create good surroundings for the temple. And second, I want to create a landmark for future generations." Going through this koan, I kept thinking of Roshi. He didn't necessarily plant pine trees like Lin Ji did, but instead he planted the Dharma here in South Jersey. First in Riverton, then in Cinnaminson, and then in the pine land of Shemung. Now the monks carry Roshi's vision of compassion and wisdom forward here in Cherry Hill. When I approach our front door and see Hote, the Laughing Buddha, the Han and the bell in the entranceway, and when I enter the Zendo and see the altar, the gong, Avalokiteshvara, Zafus, images of bodhisattvas, bamboo columns, teaching bench, Roshi's ashes on the altar, and today Roshi's cushion and raksu in front of me, I'm filled with the sense that I am in the midst of Roshi's vows, a tangible manifestation of one person's vision and commitment, a vow in physical form. We all have our shortcomings, and Roshi was no exception. But he also had a vision of creating a place where community members, students, and monks could come together and train and realize themselves. He fulfilled his commitment to that vision, student by student, member by member, day by day, year by year, starting some 50 years ago in Pennsauken, eventually in 1985, forming what we know today as the Jizoan Zen community. Roshi touched all of us in different ways. Sometimes he touched us through a teaching, perhaps a Zen chat, Roshi's signature Saturday night program, or when he was teaching on a Wednesday night, or when we were working together side by side on the grounds, or perhaps during Dokusan. We would walk away, sometimes scratching our heads, sometimes in awe, and sometimes a different person. And I'll share some of these stories shortly. Roshi was a true Zen master, always teaching moment to moment, in both subtle and direct ways. He considered himself a myth buster, challenging accepted norms and beliefs. When he took you on as a student, you learned quickly, sometimes the hard way, that he was a no-nonsense kind of guy, and that he had a much higher standard for his students and monks to live by. He was firm and direct. As a result, you learned to choose your words carefully when in a conversation with him. Otherwise, you'd be setting yourself up for a lecture. And more often than not, that was a good thing. He was a stickler for detail and expected everyone to follow prescribed protocol and etiquette. And this was especially true when in the Zendo, where he had zero tolerance for any deviation from established etiquette. Aside from his firmness and to some an intimidating style, the more you got to know Roshi, the more you would realize that deep down, he was truly a caring and compassionate person. Despite Roshi's firm, no-nonsense style, he was also a man of wit and humor. When the monks would meet with him before a Wednesday night program, for example, there were many times when we would be in tears laughing. And his occasional one-liners would have the same effect. Even during Saturday night Zen chats, he would have people laughing at times. And on occasion, those in attendance would be treated to an unexpected expletive that would leave some people speechless and some people laughing. As I mentioned, Roshi touched us all in very different ways. A few days before his death, when it was obvious that he would not be with us much longer, I started to prepare his eulogy. In addition to my comments, I wanted all the monks to have their voice in the eulogy. I asked my fellow monks to provide an example that they can recall when they were touched by something that Roshi said or did. Here are their words that were part of the eulogy at Roshi's memorial service 5 years ago. When a potential student would ask Roshi to be their teacher, he would only agree if they would commit to stay for 1 year. Here I am, 29 years later, after hearing just one teaching of Roshi. I knew I found my home. It would never leave. Matsumiko. When, at a Cape May retreat several years ago, I met Roshi one evening, we had a discussion around acceptance, since I was dealing with feelings of resentment. With time and subsequent Dharma talks about forgiveness, I've come to appreciate how important that discussion was for helping me move past resentment and to give myself the gift of forgiveness. He has also opened me to commitment again. Fran and I are about to be married in October this year in Arizona in a Buddhist ceremony by a priest Roshi suggested. Roshi has never failed to send Fran his love when we talked, and I am grateful for his presence in my life, both past, present, and in the future in my heart and mind. Shigyo. When teaching, Roshi frequently quoted Webster Buddha, referring to a common dictionary as a resource for wisdom and clarity. During a Zen chat some years ago, Roshi said three of his favorite words were courage, audacity, and faith. Webster Buddha teaches us that courage is the mental or moral strength to venture, persevere, and withstand danger, fear, or difficulty. Roshi has been the exemplar of courage these recent years as his health declines. Ever my teacher. Webster Buddha informs us that audacity is a willingness to take bold risks. Before the pandemic hit, Roshi offered me the precepts, which are vows taken by Zen practitioners. He once described them as a commitment to fathom the unfathomable. I believe that is the definition of bold. Whenever I felt doubt on this path, which is often, Roshi reminded me that it is okay if I don't understand it in my mind. I can know it in my heart, which speaks of faith, the complete trust or confidence in someone or something. Hofuku. I remember Roshi and I, just the two of us, in the Zendo at dawn. The sound of singing birds and pine cones and acorns hitting the roof of the Zendo. Incense spiraling upwards from the Buddha altar. We become as one. Time stops. We recite the three jewels together. The sun comes up. We say farewell with an embrace that fills me with love and peace for my ride home. Our last embrace to send him on his journey home. With all the love I have, we shall meet again, brother. Daitoku. Shortly after I began meditating at home, I discovered that there was a Zen monastery less than an hour away from my home and decided to take a look for myself one hot day in August. Parking in the empty lot, I walked around to the Zendo entrance and tried the door. Finding it locked, I leaned against the glass to peer inside and was startled to hear a voice behind me saying, "Can I help you?" I turned to see a stern, sweaty, middle-aged man in sleeveless t-shirts looking at me. He looked to me like a truck driver, or perhaps a caretaker. But after explaining myself, I saw his features soften and realized I was looking at the Roshi himself. He explained that this was a quiet time at the monastery, that I should come back in September to sit with the community. Unfamiliar with Zen etiquette, I reached out to shake his hand, and he accepted it with the hint of a smile, and then invited me to walk the wooded path on the way back to my car. As I began to leave, he turned and he gave me a deep bow in my direction, as if I were a monk. This memory returned to me on my final visit with the Roshi, sitting with him in his bedroom, almost unable to speak, as I held his warm hand in mine once again, soft, untroubled, reassuring me that all was well. With gratitude for this final teaching, it was now my turn to bow deeply, leaving him to explore the path beyond. Daiko. One of the essential teachings in Buddhism is that we are interconnected and interdependent. For me, Roshi has been one of those special threads that brings people together and who has helped us connect at a deeper level. When I said my goodbyes to Roshi, I thanked him for helping me finding purpose in my life. He took me in as his student, showed me the way. Roshi built in Pine Wind a community of love and compassion. His vision was to help people of all paths and ways to live, to connect to our hearts, our true nature, and to be in this world the way we were intended and created to be. There have been so many teachings from Roshi that have touched my life. But one specific teaching that confirmed that I was on the right path and in the right place was a morning daily reflection that Roshi delivered in May 2020. His reflection included the prayer of Assisi. This prayer was one that I sang in the church choir when I was younger. Many times when I felt lost and confused, I would sing it, and it brought a sense of peace and relief in me. I know from the deep depths of my being that when Roshi placed the rocks on my shoulders, this prayer was once again embedded in me. The sacred vow taken during the Jukai ceremony also confirmed this through prayer. Gesho. From the moment I arrived in Pine Wind, Roshi began to impact my life in a deep way. I have received so many valuable teachings from him, far too many to count. Family has always been one of the most special parts of my life, and my role as a husband and father has always been of utmost importance to me. One of the most profound and impactful teachings I received from Roshi was when I asked him one day, how do I balance the responsibility of protecting and guiding my three amazing daughters with allowing them the space and freedom to learn and grow and without forcing my beliefs and expectations on them? The teaching that Roshi offered was so simple, yet so profound. He said to me, we do not own our children. Although we refer to them as our children, they do not belong to us like a possession of ours. Our responsibility is to protect, guide, and nurture them without forcing our own expectations on them of who and what we want them to be. They will find their own way. I realized that my teacher was giving me a lesson on letting go of illusion and delusion of control, and that the teaching applied not just to being a parent, but also to every aspect of my life. His words left an indelible mark on me, and I carry his teaching with me, always, ever present in my heart. Donan. Quite a few years ago, at an October half-day meditation retreat at Pine Wind, we were all sitting quietly on our cushions in a zendo full of people. A monk who was sitting against the wall heard something moving behind him. He knew from experience that it was a harmless black snake that found its way inside as they do in fall. So when the bell rang to start Kinhin, he moved quickly in a stealth way to grab the snake without getting bit and rushed out the zendo door into the community room and then outside to release the snake. He was so proud of himself for doing the impossible because he just averted mass hysteria in a full zendo, and two, he didn't get bit. The euphoria, however, was short-lived because waiting for him at the door to the zendo on his return trip was Roshi. He proceeded to lecture the monk that he just set a bad example for all the monks in robes because he made too much noise exiting the zendo, and a monk should know better. Never mind you that the monk had a large snake wrapped around his arm when going through the door. When the monk proceeded to explain that he just performed an impossible task, Roshi became indignant and yelled at him the words, "too much self," which in Zen speak means too much ego. The monk went back into the zendo, bewildered by the intense encounter with Roshi, pride deflated, but having a greater appreciation that under no, I repeat, no circumstance is zendo etiquette ever to be violated, not even if you're struggling with an unruly snake. That monk was me. The last piece I want to share is a poem. In Zen Buddhism, when a monk is dying, it is traditional for a poem to be written by either himself or herself, or by a fellow monk for that person. This is a tradition that has been carried out for centuries. The poems are referred to as farewell to life or death poems. Genjo, our resident poet, prepared this poem for Roshi on behalf of the monks and the students. Blessed are you, great lion of light, a protector resting in the towering pines, watchful amongst the sleeping Buddhas. The drumming thunder of Dharma soaks through the sands of time, with each step a passing imprint on these blessed pure lands. May you always carry the sticks of Taiko's beating heart, drumming out love's song. And now this mother's stone returns to the warmth of the mountain's womb, the resting place of all the giants. From every peak, the lion roars is transmitted like the symphony of a million trumpets. Each hand and bone, wing and claw, wind and snow, teacher gone on. These stories are examples of just one time that Roshi impacted the lives of the monks, and there were others as well. Since countless people have been touched by Roshi over the years, these stories are their stories as well. It's hard to imagine how many people's lives have been changed for the better by Roshi. Roshi and I would meet once or twice a month to go over programs, teachings, to keep up on the students, discuss maintenance of the property, and the status of the community in general. One day when we were having a heartfelt discussion on the future of the community, he leaned forward, looked me in the eyes, and said, "Emyo, listen to what I'm about to say. one day you're going to be my successor. I was speechless, as I am now. After a few days, Roshi's words started to fade, and I didn't give them much thought from that time on because Roshi was relatively healthy. As long as I knew him, he had always struggled with lung issues, but he had that under control at this point in time. However, that word successor came to the forefront from the depths of my memory in April 2018, when Roshi was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. For 3 years plus after that diagnosis, his routine treatments of chemotherapy and the surgery, the monks and members of the community watched his health steadily decline until he left us in June 2021. So it didn't come as a surprise when he left us. And for those of us in robes, we knew that one day it would be up to us for carrying on the responsibility of advancing Roshi's vision of a thriving Zen community in a more just and compassionate world. That day had arrived. The loss of a founder and spiritual leader is certainly a milestone of any religious organization. When Suzuki Roshi of the San Francisco Zen Center died, his monks carried forward his vision. When Karagiri Roshi of the Minnesota Zen Center died, his monks did the same. When John Daito Lori Roshi of Zen Mountain Monastery died, his monks continued to advance his vision. And for the past 5 years, the monks of the Jizuan Zen community have done the same and will continue to advance Roshi's vision into the future. Our situation was a little more challenging than the examples that I just mentioned. It's traumatic enough when the founder dies. But when the founder dies and you have to move within 6 months from place where you were for 22 years, the level of uncertainty is elevated exponentially. That's the situation we found ourselves in at the end of 2021. We weren't sure if people would follow us to Cherry Hill or if we would lose long-time members or if we would survive financially. The monks arrived here in Cherry Hill from the Pinelands of Chemung with great faith, great doubt, great perseverance. That's essentially all we had to go by. We held our very first program here the second Saturday of January 2022, and guess what? The room was almost filled to capacity with new people and those that have been with us for some time. 6 months into the new year, and a number of sleepless nights worrying about our future, I knew we were going to be okay. And most importantly, we would be able to continue what Roshi started decades ago. And here we are today, one man's vision continuing to unfold. So I'd like to close with, again, the capping verse from the koan. The buildings and the grounds protect the Dharma and bring peace to all. The Sangha in the 10 directions will increase in wisdom and compassion. How this all comes to us is a gift we should not miss.